It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's time for our monthly conversation with Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. Topics on the table today include police residency requirements, development of the former Civic Arena site in the Hill District, and what is the new approach to UPMC's exemption? You can join the conversation with the mayor by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Mayor Peduto, always good to see you. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Happy August, Paul.
Yes, happy August. We understand that you will be negotiating a new contract with police that you've offered to bargain with the union. How has the union responded?
Well, you know, this is a negotiation, so I don't want to put too much into the discussion just because our solicitor is working with our attorneys. They have their attorneys. But you know, part of the negotiation will be centered around the Act 47 plan, meaning that there's parameters on basically how much we can spend each year with the police bureau. And by the way, we're also in negotiations with the firefighters as well. But within that ability, there's a lot of different opportunities. As we look to reform the police bureau, working with the rank and file and with the FOP on some ways that could help to increase morale is something that we want to be able to reach out to start to work with them on. So hopefully the dialogue will be one that will be positive. Speaking with the FOP leadership, they want to see the same thing happen.
Where do things stand with police morale? Where is it right now?
It's low. It's low because of several factors. But there's also the opportunity as we look to bring a new police chief in to find ways that it can be improved upon. I think there's two basic areas that we have to improve. One is within the rank and file, and that includes the sergeants and the lieutenants, increasing the morale, increasing the ability that they have to do what's needed with the patrols that are on the ground to be able to cater and create specific strategies neighborhood by neighborhood. And then the second part of that is improving the community relations. And really both of them focus in on more of a community-oriented policing that puts officers in the neighborhoods, gets them out of the cars, puts them on the street. And people will say, well, that's putting, you know, a Band-Aid on a heart attack. But you got to understand this. When you're walking a beat, you're looking at someone in the eye. You're saying hello. When you're driving a car, you're just driving by. You talk to people who grew up in Pittsburgh in the 50s, 60s, and even in the 70s, and they can tell you who their patrol officer was that used to work in their neighborhood. There was a connection. We don't have that right now. So those two things, and they're on parallel tracks, rebuilding and instilling in the officers that they are part of the solution, and rebuilding and connecting back to the community will be the goals of a new police administration.
The residency requirement has been an issue, and the city would like to see the officers living within city limits, or I believe it would be within 30 miles of the city, or it would be as the crow flies, as they say.
Yeah.
And that there's some give and take on that requirement, that what we're hearing is that the police might be willing to go along with this if they, for example, received more money. What about that?
Well, the problem with that is that under Act 47, there's only a certain amount of money that can be spent each year for every department, not just for police or fire, but every department in the city. And even there's a wage freeze that's in place for all city employees and a mandatory reduction of 5% in incidental spending as well. I mean, we're going to be under a tight fiscal watch these next 5 years in order to be able to get us to the point of 2019 when our debt payments become significantly lower. With residency, it's interesting to learn. I mean, if you learn or study the issue, there's very few police departments that have residency requirements. I mean, it's not something that is standard. And if you map out where the city of Pittsburgh police live, it's in very few neighborhoods. It's not that they're living all over the city in every neighborhood. And in the communities that are calling for it the most, in many cases, it's the fewest number of police that live there. They're not living there to begin with. You can't compel somebody to live in a neighborhood or to compel somebody to be forced to live in a certain area. So if somebody decides that they would prefer to live a mile outside the border, if I can get three things in return for that, I'd be willing to talk about it. Number one, want better rules and reforming on how we recruit officers. Having officers that look more like the city of Pittsburgh is more important than having officers that sleep in the city of Pittsburgh.
More diversity.
More diversity. And being able to make sure that there are recruitment standards are able to do that. Number two, how we promote officers. Promotion shouldn't be based on politics. They should be based on merits, and it shouldn't be simply a test. Some people are good at taking tests. Some people aren't. How much is that officer involved in the community? Are they involved in the Little League system, or are they involved in – you don't have to live in the city to help to coach football with little kids. And that type of an officer is the one that I want to see get promoted, the one that is able to be a good cop and a good community person, not necessarily where they sleep at night. And number three, how we retain officers. Because not every officer that goes through the academy should be an officer for life. And those few that sort of get into the trouble have a consistent way of getting into trouble, and they bring all the others down with them. And what we need to be able to do is have an FOP that understands that not every officer should be defended. Every officer should be given a fair trial. Every officer should be given a fair amount of time to be looked at what happened to that incident. But when it becomes a consistent basis, that officer should no longer wear the Pittsburgh police uniform. So if we were able to get that type of reform to create that type of a police bureau, then I'd be willing to let them sleep in somewhere else at night.
You have been busy hosting a monthly Mayor's Night Out and Night In where anyone can talk with you in person. What kind of community feedback have you been getting this summer?
A lot. We've done a good job of keeping up on it. Whenever you open up that process, you are opening up a fire hose of requests and information. And some of the stuff takes a while to be even able to compile, and you want to be able to let people know that you're trying to do it. But there's this McDonald's sort of philosophy in life that everything should happen within 30 seconds. And, you know, as you're going about the regular business of the city and you're getting all these more additional requests because you're opening up city government to take more, the capacity of being able to deal with it takes time. We've created the Mayor's Night Out, Mayor's Night In system in order to be able to give people direct access, not just to me, but to every decision maker in the city of Pittsburgh. This is pretty unique. It's a system that has all the people that basically have the ability to make the decisions. Every director and chief sitting there listening to you as you come up and you talk about what's going on in your neighborhood or what you think should happen in the city. And then we took it and we brought George Jetson involved, and we created Mayor's Night On, Mayor's Night Online. And we partnered with Reddit. And according to the folks at Reddit, that's the first time this has ever happened in the 9 years that Reddit's been in existence. And Ask Me Anything, an AMA, that not only had an elected official who's being fed answers by a staff member, which is how it usually works.
Right.
But with all the directors and chiefs online, in dialogue, in conversation. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next month or so, cities around the country start following the lead that Pittsburgh's taken. And we want to continue to do that. Mayor's Night On, Mayor's Night In, Mayor's Night Out will continue after this August recess, where we're giving my staff a little bit of a break from being out on and in, starting back in September and throughout the entire term that we're in office.
Last week, we looked at what's happening with the Penguins' plan to develop the former Civic Arena site. As the negotiations with Hill District leaders drag on, the Penguins have asked for an extension of the October 31st deadline to begin developing the first parcel or possibly lose the development rights. Councilman Daniel Lavelle was on this program last Thursday and said he was not in favor of extending that deadline. Should the Penguins get an extension?
Well, it really depends on where the conversation is by that time. My goal is to not need an extension. So, in other words, we want to be able to get everything done and finalized before that. But, you know, we've been very diligent about community process in this. And there's a couple of things, and there's probably a couple of difference of opinion. I served for 12 years as a member of council, as you know, and 7 years before that as the chief of staff, 19 years, probably directly involved in about $3 billion worth of development of the East End. At times, the only part of the city that was growing other than the major public investments of the stadiums and the convention center. And during that time, there was never a time that I can think of where we were in negotiations with a developer where community groups were demanding that they receive funding, direct funding from the developer in order to earn the support of the community. And we had communities like East Liberty that were on their knees and needed help. But what we did is we created benefits that would benefit the entire community, not a specific organization within the community. And those are the same roles that we're playing now citywide. So as the negotiations continue with the community, what's off the table are direct payments from the Penguins to any organization as a condition of approval. And in fact, what I did in my council district, any time that a community group would even bring that up, they were taken away from the table.
Hill leaders are demanding minority participation in the project of 35% and participation of women at 15%. The Penguins have countered with 25 and 10, which are the requirements that have been in place on city projects for years. As far as you are concerned, where do these numbers need to be?
Well, they need the numbers in the city are 25 and 10, but if you do an analysis of it, we don't even meet those numbers. I mean, we could put out numbers 50 and 40, and they're just numbers. What's needed is the backing to be able to make sure that you're meeting not just the goals, but the reality of them. So although we have numbers of 25 and 10 within the city, we haven't met those. We haven't met those in over a decade. And so my bigger concern is how we are going to measure and meet the goals that are there than what goals are being set up. A couple of different points with that. I agree that there needs to be minority participation in this development. But I said this during the campaign, and I'll say it all the way through this development. If all we do is develop the 28 acres, we failed. These 28 acres have to be able to spur the development of the Middle Hill. So as we look at community benefits, it isn't to any one specific group. It is to the community. And what we can do and what we were working to do is to assure that the development and the dollars that are being attracted through that development in the Lower Hill are then being utilized to help to rebuild the Middle Hill and to create opportunities for home ownership, affordable housing, and other opportunities as we go all the way up to Oakland. We're going to see, if we do this, the rebirth of the Middle and Upper Hill. And at the same time, as the county executive is pursuing the BRT system, the potential of Bedford, Center, Fifth, and Forbes from downtown to Oakland being one of the largest areas of reinvestment in the city. And the only way that we're going to be able to pursue that and make sure that gentrification isn't an ingredient in it is to incentivize home ownership. That's where the focus needs to be, not in payments from the Penguins to any specific community group, but in the idea that the entire community will benefit in a way that people will have the opportunity to be a part of the prosperity.
All points all well taken, but again, it really looks as though the two parties disputing or who are seeming to be in dispute about this are stuck on these numbers. So if you were to inject yourself, as others believe that you should, into these negotiations –
We are. I mean, this is weekly. I mean, it hasn't been a negotiation that has been without – I mean, we've coordinated, I think, every one of the meetings that have happened between the Penguins and the community. The point person for my office with it is my chief of staff, Kevin Acklin, who's also the chief development officer of the city and the chairman of the URA. So we bring all the resources to the table. I was on the phone, this morning with the county executive, Senator Casey, Congressman Doyle, and the Secretary of Transportation about the Tiger Grant that we're pursuing in order to be able to rebuild the infrastructure that will be a part of it. Remember, we have applied for this Tiger Grant twice before under the previous administration and struck out twice. We don't get the opportunity to strike out three times and then reapply. We better get it this time. And we're putting the emphasis like we did in Larimer, where we created one of the largest affordable housing developments in the United States, one of the four largest in the United States, $30 million. We're now doing that through our connections in Washington, our senator, our congressman, and our personal connections with the White House to try and make sure this happens for the Hill. So when we're looking at the details of whether it is 25% or 35%, which may affect 10 to 50 people, we're losing scale of the greater good of what can happen in redeveloping not just 28 acres, but an entire community. And, you know, I call it getting caught in the weeds. A lot of these debates become debates where people plant the flag, not necessarily for the betterment of an entire community, but for the sake of wanting to get what it is that they believe needs to happen. And what we'll do is, as well as we can, mediate through it, and then in the end, make a decision and stick to that decision.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's our monthly visit with Mayor Peduto. 412-246-2002, the number to call if you have a comment or question for the mayor. Much ground left to cover in the few minutes we have remaining. Since we last spoke, there's been a bit of a thaw in the city's relations with UPMC. UPMC dropped its lawsuit against the city within days of the city's decision not to appeal its state court claim against UPMC, which challenged its tax exemption. Would you characterize this as the city hitting the reset button on its relationship with UPMC?
I think it's a couple things. Number one, it's a reality check. We've gone through a dysfunctional relationship with our nonprofits for the past decade. We actually receive less money from our nonprofits than we did 10 years ago. And we are on yearly putting a tin cup out and collecting a couple pennies and quarters is our policy, while at the same time engaging in a stick approach, whether it was the tuition tax or whether it was the lawsuit against one nonprofit instead of taking on the entire issue of how we can do this. And what it has done, it has poisoned the well. The entire negotiation that we've had over the past 8 months with all the nonprofits has been at a standstill while this lawsuit has been outstanding. And even with the lawsuit that was filed improperly and was thrown out by the judge because it wasn't done in the proper way, to be able to refile it and to go after each specific entity of UPMC would never guarantee that UPMC would be declared a for-profit, but maybe that their MRI operation at the facility in Oakland would be. And the pennies that we'd be able to go after would be minimal compared to the 10 years of legal fights that we would have to do. And so there was a reality check. What is it that we want? We want our nonprofits to be a partner with us in doing certain things, of being able to help us to create ladders of opportunity between the folks that haven't seen the ability to be a part of this new economy in Pittsburgh, and understand that our hospitals and universities are our mills of today. We want a fair share of taxes so that we don't have to raise the taxes on those that live in the city or those that own property in the city in order to make up for what we're not receiving by being the regional hub for an entire multi-state area of nonprofit activity. And we want to see an opportunity to build out a long-term relationship with the nonprofits where those types of payments would be able to stabilize our budget for a decade to come. Under the previous administration and the approaches of the tuition tax and the lawsuit, we went backwards, and we had to decide whether to continue with their initiative or to take a leap of faith with the nonprofits in order to be able to have a new conversation. I can tell you this week, as of this week, we're at about a 50-50% chance of getting that new agreement done by the end of the year. Prior to that action of pulling that suit, we were at zero.
And facing litigation that would drag on and on, as you said.
Not only that, but it wasn't that Highmark or Carnegie Mellon or University of Pittsburgh or anybody else was able to even sit down at the table with us while that type of gun to your head type attitude was going on. I mean, it seriously was a dysfunctional relationship between the city of Pittsburgh and its nonprofits. And it caused this air of ill-feeling that went all the way down to the people of the city. We have to find a way to make our nonprofits, who are our major employers in this city, good neighbors, provide opportunities to create affordable housing for their lowest paid workers around the areas where the hospitals and the universities are, just like Philadelphia did, just like Chicago did. Pay a fair share so that the taxes won't have to go up in the future and that we can stabilize things like our capital budget and our pensions for the long term and be able to understand that it's by working together we can also provide opportunities for everyone who lives in the city of Pittsburgh to be able to maybe possibly be able to enjoy some of the things that these institutions bring. And there's a lot of potential in working on that side of it compared to the gun to each of our head approach that we've been in the past.
One last thing I wanted to touch upon is what's happening today with U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan. He is in Pittsburgh joining you to visit early learning classrooms and meet with early childhood education providers, parents, and community members. We are dedicating an entire program to the topic of universal pre-K as part of our Life of Learning initiative on Friday here on Essential Pittsburgh. What are your feelings, Mayor Peduto, about the importance of early childhood education?
Well, this is really an undertold story. Pittsburgh has been selected as one of 12 cities where the Secretary of Education is coming in to talk about it. And the focus of Pittsburgh is early childhood education. We'll have the opportunity for as many as 200 teachers, parents, community leaders to gather to start to have a dialogue about what early childhood education means in the city of Pittsburgh. I'll tell you what it means to me. I'm looking down at July and the most homicides we've had since 2010, and I can assure you that most of the people that committed it never had early childhood education, that by the time they were in third grade, it was almost predetermined where their course of life was going to be. And that we have an opportunity to become a model in this country to become the city of learning, that it's the opportunity to combine the Pittsburgh promise with the baby promise, because there's only 5,000 children in the city that don't have any access to early childhood education. And they're the ones that end up in trouble later in life. They're the ones that are dropping out. They're the ones that are getting involved in crime. And we have an opportunity to tie that off at the beginning. But most importantly, it's an investment in people. I mean, that's the fabric. You want to break these cycles of poverty, you invest in people early. And every study has shown it's the most wise and the most fiscally prudent way to do investment. Finally, the city of Pittsburgh, and this is a conversation I had with President Obama directly, has the opportunity to create the model for the rest of the country. And this is one of the conversations that's going to happen with the secretary today, that the president could pursue a model of pre-K through Congress over these next 2 years and go through a battle and probably get half of what he wanted and take a bruising in the process. Or, as the conversation went, you could find about 12 innovative cities to be able to tailor-make systems and start to invest in those systems and partner with the corporate community and the foundation community and the nonprofit community in order to be able to show how early childhood education can work. Then go to Congress and get it done nationally. I want Pittsburgh to be that city. And we have made it the number one request of the White House to see Pittsburgh actually realize that.
Councilwoman Natalia Rudiak's even proposing a Pittsburgh promise for preschoolers. What about that idea?
It's a great idea. And Councilwoman Rudiak has been spearheading this on council and really reaching out to those that have been a part for decades on the nonprofit and in the education community to become partners with her. And that's the type of approach we need. It's not an approach that would be simply done by government. It has to be an approach that is done by the community in the understanding that in order to break cycles of poverty, the most effective tool we have is education. And the best way to make education work is to let everyone start out of the gate together.
The mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, has been our guest making his monthly visit to Essential Pittsburgh. Mayor Peduto, thanks so much for joining us on the program. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. Good luck tonight in the big game.
Thank you. Yeah, the net crashers will be glad to hear that. Coming up, why Pittsburgh ranks as one of the most walkable cities in America and a data-driven look at pedestrian safety in the city. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.